On this episode of the Cooligans, oh my God, it's a big one. We talk about the Vancouver Whitecaps or the enter your own city name. Let's play Mad Libs because they might be leaving in 6 months. And I think Christian's got a cool idea on how to keep them, and I poo-poo it.
Yes, that's what he does. We've been doing this for a decade. And we're going to be joined by the one and only Clint Dempsey. Deuce himself is joining us to talk about his new partnership with Gatorade, his documentary, and everything going on leading into this World Cup. He got a lot of stuff to say. And some Rapido reactions, a lot going on all over the world in footy. So all this and more today on the Cooligans. So I started taking Portuguese lessons and it's been awesome. Really, really fun.
I think you're going to say awesome in Portuguese. What is that?
I don't know what
it is. Oh, damn. Okay. We haven't gotten that far.
We're not there. We're not there yet.
You're just dealing with the hello and how do I get to the bathroom?
I know how to say the color red.
Okay.
Vermelho.
Exactly how everyone else says it.
Okay. But this has been the fun discovery.
Can I ask why?
I want to learn a new language. I've never tested myself in that way.
And you pick one that's only used in two countries.
But there's a lot of Portuguese speakers.
Yeah, by virtue of Brazil being
exactly,
huge.
Exactly. I like Brazilian music and that's it. I mean, I don't got to justify myself
you
to
know,
anybody.
You know, yeah, I'm just interested. As you're like, I need to learn a new language. I'm going to go with this tiny language.
It's not a tiny language, relatively, but I understand. Mandarin.
Carter, can you look up the most spoken languages? Where does Portuguese fit? Where would you think?
I mean,
you think top five?
It's not top five. It has to be pretty low because of Mandarin. Mandarin is first.
Mandarin is first. English, I think, is third. Spanish is second.
Okay.
Then French, maybe fourth, because of the amount of countries in Africa.
French?
The amount of countries in Africa that speak French.
There's a couple, but I don't know if there's
fifth. Wow. Behind, but number one. Hold on.
It has to be Mandarin.
Number one is Mandarin.
Mandarin. Yeah. Number two is
Spanish.
Boom. Three, English. Boom, four, French.
Hindi.
Damn!
Well, you see?
Damn, I went four for five, though.
All right.
Hindi. You should have learned Hindi, dog. You know, it's funny. If you spoke Hindi, people would think you were Indian.
And they also think I'm Brazilian.
Yeah. That's actually a good point. I don't think there's any language you can speak.
There's no language I can speak that people won't think I'm from that country. I'll be like, oh, this is that Chinese dude, right? Christian Polanco.
You learn whatever they speak. You learn whatever they speak in Uzbekistan. They're like, yeah, that fits.
But this has been the fun thing is learning how, you know how in Spanish when we have, how do we say McDonald's?
McDonald's.
Madonna, right?
That's another one. Cuban would be more Madonna.
TikTok.
Tiki-toki.
No.
TikTok.
Tito. Yeah. All right. Or Facebook.
Yeah.
Something like
Facebook.
That. But in Brazilian Portuguese, they are not comfortable with ending words.
Everything has to end in a vowel.
In a vowel, yeah. So they can't.
That's why Hendrik is Enrique.
Enrique. TikTok, Tiki-toki. Which is, but then the other one that honestly made me uncomfortable that I learned was the way they say ketchup.
Ketchupi?
They say ketchup-y.
Ketchup-y?
Ketchup-y.
Yeah.
Which is, what are we
doing? That sounds like a Romanian immigrant who owns a diner is what that sounds like. Would you like some ketchup-y?
It sounds like you're making fun of me trying to learn the language. Yeah. Like, oh, he'll believe this if I say this.
This is like, no one tell him that's not how you say. The next time this guy orders burger and fries. Everyone's in for a little giggle.
Just toss them out of McDonald's like Jazzy Jeff from Fresh Prince. It is ketchup-y is what a.
This is like when I explain to my mother-in-law that if she's ever offering someone tea, which she does a lot, she's a big tea drinker, and she's always like, even a coffee drinker, she's always like, "Do you want me to make you a cup of tea?" I told her, I go, "That's old school. We don't say that anymore. That's saying, do you want me to teabag you?" And she believed me.
Sure.
She believed me.
But this is, have you?
Solid week went by and she's like, you know, I was, my mother-in-law is like a preschool teacher. So she's very much like a, she's like how a puppet would be. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
sure.
She's very much like a sweet person, but like doesn't understand sarcasm right away. And she was like, you know, it took me a while to realize people were laughing at me, not with me.
But this is, there's a hilarious trend on TikTok. So funny. It's like, it's usually daughters going to like Starbucks with their moms.
Can I get extra back shots?
Can I get? And then she's like, oh, you know, a mocha latte, 2 back shots, please.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
the
yeah.
person on the in the drive thru was like, what?
Yeah. The one was like, the guy's like, ma'am, we don't do that here. And she's like, what did you just have me ask for? So, no, I love that.
Fun. Yeah. Languages are fun. Words, so remember, words, folks, are silly.
Let's change the culture so my mother-in-law doesn't feel bad. From now on, if you're offering someone tea, say, yo, let me teabag you. Would you like me to teabag you?
Hey, you got to say it politely as well.
You know what you could use right now?
My dear, my dearest.
Oh, are you, is your throat a little sore? Well, I have the answer for you. Please allow me to teabag you.
Okay. All right, everybody. That's our fan base, the teabaggers.
Yeah. Isn't that what they call people from Boston when they drop the tea in the harbor?
I don't know if that's what they called them, but they did. They are famous for doing that.
Nah, damn. I was hoping you'd just believe that. Okay.
Welcome to the Cooligans, everybody. My name is Christian Polanco.
I'm Alexis Guerrero.
I'm here, as always, bringing you the heat, the fire, the funniest, the funniest dudes in the soccer game.
Damn.
And as always, on Yahoo! Let's go. Hot show today, as always. We keep it up. Consistent for 900 and some odd shows in a row. Yeah. It's always been a hot show.
We've never had a cold show, according to Christian's barometer. It's always hot.
So we have to talk. It's a midweek MLS. There's a lot going on in Major League Soccer. And we got to talk about Chelsea and all the drama that they're going through. They just fired their manager. And we also, I forgot what the other segment was.
I mean, we're going to talk about it.
Oh, that's right.
They're already listening. Don't worry about it.
That's right. Clint Dempsey's on the show today. How did I forget that one?
Oh, yeah. That might be the biggest one. Funny fact, Clint Dempsey was the one who fired Liam Rossignol. Most people don't know that.
Yeah, see, we're going to get to the bottom of it.
You know, most people don't know that.
The fact that he has this much.
You only know that because you're here, and it's a hot show.
Clint Dempsey tied goal scorer for U.S. men's national team history. He'll be joining us a little bit to talk about his new partnership with Gatorade and a little bit about his documentary that just came out.
Plus, we talk about World Cup tickets. We talk about the moment he realized that the game was gone.
Exactly, man. Damn. That's how he talks now. Game's gone. He's a Brit. He's just Clint with a British
accent.
He's
a British guy who doesn't like too many passes.
All right, let's start today with the Vancouver Whitecaps. The best team in MLS may only have 6 months left in their city. All signs are suggesting the Vancouver Whitecaps will be relocating, but can their fans keep their team in Vancouver? I think I know what they need to do to keep their team in their city.
This is the top topic.
First, let's talk about why they're leaving. It's not because the team is doing poorly. They have Thomas Mueller. They have
because the owners and the fans want them gone, right?
Exactly. Too much success.
Get out of here.
Can't deal with all this. No, man. So right now there's a whole movement, the Save the Caps movement, SaveTheCaps.com, and it's obviously similar to this has obviously happened. A few times across Major League Soccer's history.
You know what sucks too is like this is their most successful period that I can remember. Sure. Outside, and I'm sure they've had really successful periods before they were part of MLS because this is one of those clubs a lot like Portland and Seattle in this Cascadia region where they've had a rivalry since I think it was called the A-League back then.
Yeah, yeah.
Like leagues before when they were in the lower levels before there was an MLS for them to be a part of. They have this rivalry. This is a storied club going back NASL days.
Right. And it's all this recent success and then all the news about them potentially leaving is obviously disheartening. It's just like as soon as the team gets good, like now we have to possibly leave.
But it's not like somebody bought them and wants to move them. It's like everybody kind of wants to stay. They just, I guess the government is telling, like the local government is telling them there's no place.
Here are the specifics, right? So the team was, it's not been sold, but the team has been put up for sale in 2024, and which now triggered concerns from fans of like, oh, will the team relocate with new ownership? Right now, they do not have a lease agreement. The lease agreement is only until the end of 2026.
Right, and the stadium is government-owned.
Yes, so they have nothing in place for 2027, so it's possible that the Vancouver Whitecaps will be forced to move and play somewhere else next season. So then the other issue is that since BC Place is government owned, the revenue that they receive from you know, match day and all that stuff is only, they only receive 12% of the revenue. So which it's obviously seemingly pretty low.
Yeah.
And you have most clubs that own their own stadium get a lot much more of that. Right. This is, you know, we had the conversation with Brad Sims, you know, about NYCFC building their stadium and the current arrangement that they have with Yankee Stadium and Citi Field. And it's, you're sort of hamstrung and it's difficult.
And that's part owners.
Right, right.
That's so, a stadium owned by part of your ownership group.
And it's, so it's difficult to just really bring in as much money as possible. And I'm not here necessarily speaking like, yo, these owners, we need to make sure that they get money. But it's like, it when you think about running,
it's part of a sustainability, you
but
know what sustainability, I mean?
And running a club and buying players and stuff like that. And when you hear 12% of revenue, you're like, okay, I mean, it seems like it might be pretty difficult to run a successful club.
Yeah.
And it's impressive that they've been able to be as successful as the Whitecaps as they've been, given the financial limitations. So That's a reality, not necessarily putting any blame on anybody, but you have to start thinking about that. This is 6 months is going to be here any day now, and Vancouver Whitecaps fans will be obviously devastated. There has to be some sort of update because this is kind of crazy, the fact that we're dealing with this right now still in Major League Soccer, and now with, you know, having a player like Lionel Messi in the league, having players like Thomas Muller, to relocate a team would be just so disappointing.
Yeah, I was looking it up because there's also a team in the Canadian Premier League which just shut down, but that was in Winnipeg. I thought it was in Vancouver.
No,
Vancouver has Vancouver FC, so maybe this is like a nice boon for the Canadian Premier League to be the only game in town, and clearly there's a fan base there. But
sure.
The hope is that Whitecaps fans get to keep their team. I struggle to figure out, now again, I've never been to Vancouver, so I don't know, but it's hard for me to assume that there's nowhere to build a stadium. You know, soccer stadiums, we've seen them in backyards, like Luton Towns, you know what I mean?
And sure, sure.
In England, if England has space for a stadium, how the hell does Vancouver not have space for a stadium? It just doesn't make a ton of sense. And I'm sure, you know, Vancouver, much like a lot of Canada, is going through real estate booms right now. So things are wildly expensive. I could understand that. But to me, it seems like a lot to ask of the government to help you find a space. You, if you're an ownership group and maybe it's time to bring in new investors, you shouldn't need tax money to build a stadium. New York City FC is a good example of that. That there's no tax money. I'm sure there's tax abatements. I'm sure there's tax delays.
Yeah.
But there's no tax money that. There's no taxpayer money that went directly into building that stadium. I kind of would hope the same thing for Vancouver.
This is the Schuster. The CEO of Vancouver Whitecaps, and he says, quote, "Would I prefer to have a beautiful little stadium like St. Louis or Austin F- Austin or LFC? What does that mean?
Liverpool, tiny."
So he says, "Yeah, but I've never excluded the option or possibility that BC Place will be the solution and the long-term home," Schuster says. So there has to be either...
This is a stadium that's going to be part of the World Cup.
BC Place?
Is it not? That is, yeah.
Is
that's
it?
A World Cup hosting stadium.
Okay, okay. So
stadium. It's crazy.
There has to be...
Especially the bounce that's going to come from that.
I would imagine, look, there's probably... You know, I've seen Don Garber talk about this. He spoke about this, I think, at last... the State of the League address before the MLS Cup or All-Star. I forget when that happens. But he was talking about this, the team potentially moving. And it's... you know, a lot of the, like, I remember with Columbus, like, a lot of the frustration was put towards Don Garber because he was kind of seemingly trying to move the team to Austin, or at the very least, like, just doing whatever Precourt kind of wanted. And obviously that there was a huge uproar. But this is a situation where, like, it seems like it can at the very least be resolved temporarily by them just being like, yo, can we get more than 12%? 12% seems a little bit low. Like, I hear that number. Again, I don't know the complete authenticity of it.
I could argue the point that maybe the stadium is like, yo, we're contractually obligated with all the other contracts. I think they've missed out because of motocross. They've missed out on matches because, or had to move matches because of motocross, concerts,
yeah,
other things. they were like, if we give you more than 12%, then we have to give everyone else more than 12%. And maybe that ruins their viability to keep the stadium. I also can't understand from a municipality standpoint how you can't come into a ground share agreement with your most consistent ground user when if they leave, odds are you're going to bring in a lot less revenue because we've seen the fan bases. So I'm trying to not play devil's advocate, but I'm trying to understand.
Is Beyonce doing a residency out there?
What I'm saying, she ain't moving, right? Like,
why you stop. Where's the competition?
Right? The motocross ain't every week, is it? Because the MLS has a pretty healthy season. The part that's frustrating is like it's also a closed stadium and they're about to move to a much more wintry schedule. I know it's like spring and fall.
Yeah.
But as far as I'm concerned, like this would be a great place to continue to play through the cold months because it's closed. I mean, and as much as I hate turf and I want none of the pitches to have, you know, fake grass, I want them all to be real grass. I don't know that that's a possibility up there. You know what I mean? And to keep a stadium that clearly has a great fan base attached to it, a long history in that city, the team clearly belongs in Vancouver. It would be dumb to move it. It's like the reason Utah Jazz doesn't make sense to me. But it's like when you move it out of New Orleans, the word Jazz makes no sense in Utah. White Caps, it's going to be like the, you know, the San Diego White Caps. But doesn't make sense.
The Los Angeles Lakers. What lake?
Also doesn't make sense. Yeah. Ain't no lake there, bro. Yeah, Minneapolis got a gang of lakes.
Go back to Minneapolis, bro. But no, it's a, you know, and this is where I think about, in 2018, when we went to Columbus and we were doing the World Cup comedy tour and we did a stand up show.
And this is your thing that you think is going to save Vancouver.
Well, at the very least, I mean, you go to SaveTheCaps.com. It feels very similar to what we experienced in 2018, right? So as soon as the Columbus crew were threatened to leave or threatened to be relocated, when we did this show, the crew had not been saved yet.
Oh, no. It was nowhere near it.
I
even said on stage, like, Doug, y'all need to move on.
We were basically like, all right, we're the comic relief to cheer you guys up because your team is going to be leaving any second.
Yeah. This is the last time we come into this city, you know?
And so, I mean, some younger MLS fans may not remember, but, you know, the Save the Crew movement was tremendous.
And to give context, a guy named Andrew Precourt bought the team and wanted to move it to Austin. There is a team in Austin, and Precourt does own that team. But the reason they were there is a Columbus Crew still is because they were able to say someone else can buy the crew, Precourt can get his team. It's a single entity, so it's very different than most sports leagues where MLS kind of owns all the teams, quote unquote. It's all one big thing. So they were able to find a way. But you think that this what we saw on stage was the reason why this team was saved?
Yes, very much so. I mean, there was so much energy and effort and activism, and I was watching the city council meetings. Same. from the Austin fans. This
is a video of it.
I don't know if we can hear it, but they're yelling save the. There we go. So this is in a comedy club, bro, and it's packed with Columbus Crew fans. And they're doing everything possible to keep their team. And I left Columbus being like, yo, I think they're going to keep their team. This is like surreal. Like I'm truly convinced by the passion of these fans that they're doing something that's going to affect real change and affect like the, you know, sometimes government feels like, oh, it's a machine that really can't be stopped. And this is a perfect example of that. So I don't know.
I'm going to disagree. I do think that this helped in a way. But the reason why I think Columbus Crew was able to keep their team was because when the Cleveland Browns moved in the middle of the night to Baltimore, the owner was Art Modell. Ohio put in a rule that says like that can never happen again because it devastated.
Yeah.
First of all, it devastated the fans. The real reason is it devastated the economy, not having a major NFL team. And I think in this situation, it was rare, but it just so happened that the crew were in Columbus. If that was the Pittsburgh crew, they wouldn't exist right now. I think the fact that it was in Ohio and they had put in this rule, this Art Modell rule, I forget the actual name of the rule, but because of Art Modell, they put in a rule like literally like the next possible time they could, they put in a rule to say that can never happen again. You can never take a team away from us. And that just so happened that the team was in Ohio. I don't know that that rule stretches past the border into Canada and can help save Vancouver. And I truly believe that while emotionally, though the protests and whatnot moved some people involved in the possible movement of the Columbus Crew, I don't think it had anything to do with it. I think it was the people that we met after they were chanting after the show who were like, no, we're lawyers. We're taking the fight to them. And there happens to be this rule, this Armadale rule, that we believe creates a statute that helps us keep this team here. I think MLS's hands were tied. I don't know if that stretches to Vancouver, but if there's any way for these fans to be able to use that as a precedent to be able to keep their team, I hope so. But I think they can protest from now until whenever, and that team's still going to be loaded on a truck and still moved out.
I mean, that's a possibility, but to imply that the public pressure that was put on by all those people didn't... I understand that there's a law. I mean, I love how you're like, yeah, billionaires won't disrespect laws. Like, they don't... You think they can't find ways around stuff?
They were legally not able to.
Yes. Look, I think this administration
shows... They weren't like, whoa, there's a law. We better respect it. were like, take me to court. And they did.
Yes. But unless there is public pressure and political pressure and that political will, that those laws aren't as enforced.
What's the last protest you think worked?
What's the point of this?
It's a real question. It's a real question. What was the last protest you think worked?
Save the Crew protest.
It didn't work.
It didn't work. It literally worked, but no,
it
didn't work.
There's literally a rule in Ohio that stopped it. There is none.
Sure. I mean, look, we do not share this this same...
No, we don't.
Lack of I don't know, activism or even just the impact that can have. I think it very much does. And I think it takes like that, boots on the ground, people going to our comedy show, going to those city council things. Mm-hmm. And that's how you change people's minds, like being in front of them, making your case. Yeah. And if those people did not do that, I think the Crew would be what Austin FC is now.
I disagree. I think it's cute to think that. I don't think that's the way the real world works. I wish that were the case. I don't think it is. But I hope Whitecaps fight every way you can to keep your team. If you're the owners, do better. You got enough money. If you don't, bring in other investors. Let Thomas Mueller build a stadium. He made a lot of money at Bayern, bro.
Okay. Well, no, I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful they can stay. I mean, especially watching, they just got to an MLS Cup final and seeing all the success. It'd be heartbreaking for them to leave now.
I mean, Christian, legends have walked through this door, virtual door.
No, they don't want to actually come inside the building. But
No. It's something about the smell upsets them.
But absolutely honored to be joined by our next guest. Every single time, even as soon as he got on the call, it felt like we were picking up after, from our last conversation with him. So it's just
is crazy to say, because, I've seen this guy score with all parts of his body for the U.S. men's national team.
Okay. Use your imagination, folks.
Yeah. He's an absolute legend. When I say legend, the greatest player in American history, the one, the only, Clint Dempsey, everybody.
Clint, what's good, up? Man? Thanks for having me.
Come on, dudes. What's going on? How's life treating you these days?
Man, busy, running and gunning. Got that new doc out, chasing kids around. So, staying busy, that is for sure.
Exactly. Man, you're on a promotional, these press junkets. You're Hollywood now, man. It's seeing you on the Champions League show, letting people know, giving a peek behind the curtain of what Clint Dempsey's life is like. But now leading into this World Cup, we're honored to have you here. And also on behalf of Gatorade, you're working on a new campaign with them. But can you talk? Because we can sort of show what we're going through as well. We're busy as hell. Everybody wants to cool again somewhere. I know it's crazy that anybody wants us anywhere, but I know
I'm afraid to check the DMs. I'm afraid.
I'm just saying, I'm sure everybody wants Clint somewhere. So what, leading to a home World Cup, what's it like from the media perspective for a legendary player of the U.S. men's national team? What's your life like right now?
Like you said, working on this Gatorade campaign. I was the narrator of it. It was Trust What's Inside. Basically, it's about the work you put in is the work you get out. It's kind of sweat equity. There's no shortcuts. And it's something that, resonated with me, because coming from a small town in Nacogdoches and trying to make it to the big stage was no easy feat. But It's just busy, man. Just a lot of travel. If you're not busy in a World Cup year, like, you kind of will never be busy if you're involved in this game. So just enjoying the excitement of the tournament we got coming up this summer and just trying to make the most of this year.
I mean, that's interesting. So you said it was with Gatorade, huh? Let me just take a sip from this real quick.
I mean,
suddenly I feel refreshed. Quick question about this. I mean, you hear what you sound like, right? Isn't it crazy that people pay you with your accent to narrate things?
Oh, yeah, man. I mean, I struggle pronouncing words, doing the whole reading process, like when to pause, when not to. My southern drawl gets in the way a little bit.
Gone away a little bit, though. Have you noticed that? Is it because you don't live in Texas anymore?
What's up?
Your southern drawl has kind of gone away a little bit. You sound a little bit more neutral.
I guess it depends on about around whom I'm around. I'm back in Texas, obviously, you kind of put it on a little bit more. I think maybe when y'all are like away from New York and then y'all are back to New York, I'm sure it's a little bit thicker when you're at home, but... at least I didn't go the other way, right? Like Brad Guzan or Jada Merritt or Brad Friedel have this English accent being an American. So I'll take a little bit of southern drawl going away versus picking up a whole nother accent.
Yeah.
I love it.
The first time we ever spoke to Brad Friedel in person, I'm like, are you a prince by any chance? where did you get this accent?
It's crazy, man. That's, I mean, when you're over there for so long, it's easy to kind of pick up, but I feel like I did a pretty good job of, you know, not going all the way.
I love that because even in, you know, in the title of your documentary, You Don't Know Where I'm From, Dog, when Micah Richards was first telling that story and he was doing your voice, like impersonating you to tell the story, he did it in a southern accent. So I'm like, yo, in the moment, he's in England, he had every reason to be like, to adapt to, you know, their culture and be like, nah, bro, this is who I am and you gonna remember me.
Yeah, I mean, that was the mentality, right? Like you were a big player in MLS and you go over there and then you're on the bench and you're coming in being more of a sub and then you're fighting for everything that you can get, right? And then feeling a certain type of way because I don't think around the world people saw American as like, oh, this is a great place for development. And when they bring players on, they come in and make such a huge impact, like what you see in Holland and the Netherlands and stuff like that, or Spain or South America. So when I went over there, I mean, there were some guys before me that had paved the way, but I wanted to kind of take it to another level. And the only way that you're going to do that is fight for everything that you got. And that just kind of was my mentality. I'll tell you a quick story of from the documentary, but they didn't put in it, but My mom was pregnant helping my dad put up a barbed wire fence when we had leased a little bit of land and they used to run some cattle. But while they were helping, there were kids in the car. They accidentally hit the shifter and I think put it in neutral and kind of rolled my mom back into the barbed wire a little bit when she was pregnant with me. And she got a little cut up and bloody. But they always kind of joke around that, you know, I've been fighting ever since I was in my mom's belly. So that kind of was my mentality from the get-go from stuff like that.
Damn, Jesus, bro.
You've been dodging weapons.
I've been
since
like
birth.
Neo, man. Just trying to make it.
No wonder you didn't mind punching a glass wall, you know, when you don't get to start.
So I want to talk about you mentioned that no shortcuts to success in this Gatorade campaign. I mean, when I think of just that phrase, I mean, Clint Dempsey is one of the first people that comes to mind because of your authenticity and how you made it and fighting for every opportunity that you got. So when you know the main moments, obviously the you don't know where I'm from, dog, the punching, you know, punching the glass and you know, cutting up a referee book and all these crazy wild moments. But when you think of that term, no shortcuts to success, what are those things that behind the scenes that people may not know about that helped you get to the moment you got to in your career?
I mean, the 3-hour drives back and forth to Dallas as a kid, going up to the high school and sometimes not having nets on the goal and shooting and practicing your craft, playing, you know, men's league, Latin league on Sundays where you're getting elbowed in the face and got to learn to sink or swim, taking the risk of leaving Texas and being on my own, going to college in South Carolina at Furman University. And then lucky enough to make it pro in MLS, but then taking the risk to go overseas and to push myself, not being, you know, just always in a comfortable situation, make sure I was challenging myself and trying to be around the best players in the world. So not only was there's no shortcuts, but I think the big key is also don't get fooled. You got to stay hungry. You got to stay motivated. And that's what kept pushing me to trying to play at the highest level possible. I was trying to get to Champions League, was never able to do that, but did some special things with Fulham and Tottenham. I mean, getting to Europa League final, finishing sixth in the Premier League with Fulham. I think that was one of the highest places that they finished in the league. I mean, Tottenham at the time was 72 points in the season, which was one of their best points totals. We just ended up missing out by, I think, 1 point of getting in Champions League. So when I look back on my career and everything, it's my moments that were in Europe and my moments representing the national team, playing in World Cups, because that's what I dreamed about as a kid. And once we didn't qualify for the World Cup in 2018, my kind of fire went away and I knew it was time to kind of hang them up.
Yeah. Hey, Tottenham didn't get relegated while you were there, right?
Oh, man. Damn,
had nothing
bro.
To do with you.
Come on.
You can't.
Had nothing to do with you, Baba.
I don't know what's going on there. That
they
last
might need you back,
Brighton,
dog. You want to play in the championship? Minute.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
I want to ask you, we talk a little bit about how Gatorade, right? Gatorade, thanks again for coming on and talking to us about the new project with Gatorade. It's very refreshing. I just actually saw a news update that was not very refreshing. This game has grown so much from when you started playing in those back lots in Nacogdoches. The game is huge in America, yet it's apparently the U.S. versus Paraguay game, they're struggling to sell that game out and sell tickets. Why is it still difficult for the U.S., especially the U.S. men's national team, to sort of be this bigger power, to grow to that level where it almost feels automatic that when the U.S. plays, everyone's going to get hyped for that game?
I think there's two things. One, you can't price out the working class from games, right? You can't price out the people that I mean, when you think about soccer or football, like you think about all you need is a ball to go play, right? You can be barefooted and all you need is a ball, right? And if you don't have like the true people that are involved in the game and it covers every culture, every demographic, but you can't price out, you know, the people that live it, right? And also you have to inspire, right? You need a product on the field that makes people want to go spend that money to watch you play, right? And there was a big opportunity in Atlanta. There was big crowds for the Belgium and Portugal games. And we just didn't take advantage of that. I mean, there was two good first half performances that we saw, but we were outclassed in the second half versus Belgium. And then in Portugal, with all the subs that were made on at halftime, we were kind of cheated out of the second half. At least let us get to the 65th, 70th minute, see if we could kind of get back in that game and maybe tie it up. But it was almost looked like, I get it. You got to rest players for their club, but it was almost like a little bit of damage control. Like, oh, we made subs, so if we lose, you know, we were trying things and this and what have you. But we still got the exciting games coming up of, you know, Senegal and Germany, the friendlies there. And you have to give the fans something to cheer about and a reason to go out and buy tickets also. So I think that's the two things that you're kind of dancing with.
Just one quick question, follow-up to that. What would Mama Dempsey and Papa Dempsey say if you were to ask them, if you were young, and you asked them to go see a World Cup game this year?
Oh, man. They would... You know, and them, man, to be real with you, they probably try to figure out a way. We go into debt, max out some credit cards, because they took me to the World Cup in 94. I got to go to the Cotton Bowl in Texas and watch Germany versus South Korea. And then I got to go see Argentina versus Bulgaria, but I wasn't able to see Diego Maradona play because he got in trouble. So they found a way for me to go in 94 to watch those games. But I think also back then it was easier for people to kind of get to the games with the whole lottery system. And this, it just made it so difficult and confusing for everybody because, you know, not everybody is on the computer and doing all that kind of stuff and understanding. It needs to be simplified, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you hear stories of people who went to the World Cup final, sitting in the, you know, the center kind of midfield seats, And they were like $300, the tickets. And that is not even close to what it is now. I mean, we can go on for days about that. My last question to you is, now you being part of this campaign and doing voiceover especially, I'm curious if that triggered anything. You know, Alexis, he's been in a Netflix show in BoJack Horseman doing character voices. Did it pique any interest in possibly being like, yo, I could be in the next Cars, next Toy Story. Why can't Dempsey do one of those things? Did that trigger anything in you to be like, yo, maybe this is a new career outlet for me?
I mean, I don't know about all that. It was a fun process to be a part of. I think the big thing is being around a producer that can help you out and kind of coach you on what they need from you, but also allowing you to be yourself. So being in situations where you have a good back and forth and a freedom to like take risk and try a few things, I think that makes for a better experience than just read it this way and that's it. Or would you say something different here? Like having a little bit of back and forth and an option to kind of do your own thing, I think makes for a more, enjoyable experience. So I'll never say never, but I wouldn't say that, I'm the best with all that stuff, but saying that, I was really pleased with how this came out, and they coached me up well.
I love it. Yeah, the way maybe I would think, because we just spoke to another player, Tommy McNamara, about being coached by Bruce Arena and about the freedom that Bruce Arena would give you. So your producer was like
Bruce Arena gave him freedom.
Because he trusted him.
Clint, he's losing his fastball, Clint.
All right.
Damn, I missed that.
Maybe he changed it. It was a different era, I guess. Clint Dempsey, absolutely honored. Firsthand, you are welcome on this show any single time, and it's always an honor when you accept invitations from us. So seriously, Clint, hopefully we get to bump into each other throughout this summer and maybe one of these matches. But continue best of luck with the Gatorade campaign, and hopefully we get to see you soon.
Yes, sir. Appreciate y'all, boys.
Cheers, brother.
Liam Rossignol is the 10th manager in 10 years to be let go at Chelsea. How has a team that has won every trophy available to them continue to struggle to find stability? And if you're British, stick around, because I'm going to prove it's got nothing to do with the Americans. It's your fault. Yet again, another manager sacked. Mm-hmm. Should we be surprised at this point?
I mean, it's the Premier League. It's just, most of these jobs are, just temporary.
Yeah, they're but
just...
Chelsea is a revolving door, dude. Chelsea is a toxic ex who you're like, oh, all of y'all smashed as well?
Sure. You know how that, those red pill dudes that are like, she's not yours. It's just your turn.
Yeah.
This is what Chelsea is.
Chelsea, you're saying Chelsea for the streets. Chelsea for the streets, yo. I mean, this is ridiculous. Like, you know, people are like complaining that, another manager's been sacked, blah, blah, blah. There's two parts of this conversation. One, even going back as far as the Roman Abramovich era, sure, it's becoming a little bit faster. And you can see the stat here, right? If you're in red in this thing, it's probably not good. But this is how quickly they get rid of their managers. Chelsea has always had a history of being relatively quick about re-upping a manager. All right, next one up. It used to be about a year and a half. Now it's about half a year.
Just for some context, for the audio listeners who are not looking at the pictures, Chelsea average days per manager under Roman Abramovich was 528.67, and average days under Bluco, which is Todd Bowley and them, 258.40.
Todd Bowley and them. Yeah, which kind of tells you everything.
He rebranded being like, nah, it's not me. Yeah. It's Bluco.
Bluco.
Co.
No.
The corporation.
I feel like we're not saying the and them as loud as y'all saying the Todd Bowley part.
We gotta make sure, because my name be in these papers.
Why always gotta be me? You know, he actually had the shirt underneath his suit. So why always me?
I don't want to, let people forget necessarily.
Chelsea have been on a terrible run since Enzo Maresca left. Before that, though, there was high flying. They won Club World Cup.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they were looking good. They looked like they were going to finish.
Cole Palmer was the next big thing.
Right? Everything seemed like it was heading in the right direction. And then he leaves under some... And I think that's more telling than anything else. He left being like, I can't work under these conditions.
Yeah.
Which that's, to me, is... more of a sign or a red flag than Liam Rossignol not working out. The fact that Liam Rossignol even got the job when no one knew who he was, and I think he was what? He was at Strasbourg?
He was at Strasbourg, yeah.
The fact that he got this job so quickly without there seemingly being a search for a Chelsea-level manager kind of tells you that there's some faults. And while I think Bluko is doing a relatively bad job,
very generous.
What a limb. What a limb to stand on for me. Bluko's doing a pretty bad job, right? They did win. They won Club World Cup. They beat PSG, the Champions League winners.
Yeah.
And that was like a full squad PSG. That was like no joke PSG. The fact that they won under Bluko tells you like, okay, there's some signs that things are heading in the right direction. This shows more mismanagement. The part that upsets me, though, is there's a lot of British people saying like the Americans got to get out of here. This isn't Americans' fault. This is Todd Boehly's fault. Look, since the Chelsea players surrounded the referee Paul Tierney, which I know that's where we all remember where we were. They've played six, lost six, scored zero, and conceded 14. That's not including beating Port Vale, which I believe is a League Two team, if I'm not mistaken, in the FA Cup, mm-hmm. where they beat 7-0. This shows that Liam Rossignol was not the right guy for this job. This doesn't show that Bluko doesn't know what they're doing. There's other things that show Bluko doesn't know what they're doing. But this isn't a sign of that. This shows he should have never been hired in the first place.
I mean, we've heard those murmurs of just like how the club is run. And it already started looking odd when we were seeing these like 8-year contracts. Mudrik. Yeah. All these issues. And I think the Maresca stuff, which hasn't been, I don't know what's verified necessarily, but the murmurs were that higher-ups at Bluko were trying to influence coaching decisions and what players would get played so that they could therefore lift and raise the transfer fee of certain players.
Right.
And as soon as you a suit comes into the coach's office and it's like, hey, you should do this and you should do this. This is why I imagine Maresca being like, you can't be serious. Like how long are we going to do this?
Right.
So it seems like from an organizational perspective, the club is just they're trying to run the club like a startup or something. I mean, it's just
they're trying to run it like an American sports team.
And it's not because
if you run an NFL team and the owner walks in and be like, you know, that quarterback would draft. I don't know why he's got a Southern accent.
No.
But I'm gonna keep going with it.
His family owned people, Alexis.
Keep going with this. That quarterback draft, you might want to play him, man. You know, like
why can't the Premier League owners talk like that, bro?
Yo, dog, I feel like y'all messing up. Y'all don't have enough cute accents.
Why does every Premier League owner have a cowboy hat? Yeah.
To me, that's kind of common in American sports where like I'm the owner. This is my team where in soccer, football, whatever you want to call it, when the trophy's won, in the NFL, the owner gets it first. And I own this joint. Y'all play for me. And in soccer, you never out there. You don't get any confetti on you whatsoever, just on the bottom of your feet.
I'm just saying, I don't feel bad for Chelsea. They gave the damn Club World Cup trophy to Trump in the celebration. I don't feel bad at all.
Oh, he got to keep Reece James's
medal?
Yeah, the medal. He put one in his pocket.
Oh, wow.
You didn't see that?
I
there was an injured player, and he was like, whoop, this is mine. You know, he's showing people. He's like, I beat PSG. I don't know if you saw that.
You saw me there. I lifted the trophy.
The only thing I'm going to say is if this is not America's fault, this is Todd Bowley's fault.
That's fair.
Okay? Because, they're saying, Americans don't know how to run teams. What are you talking about? What was the last English manager to win the Premier League? None. Ever. No Englishman has ever won the Premier League. How about when was the last English owner? When was the last English owner to win the Premier League? It's never happened. There was part owners of, there were some Englishmen who were part owners of Manchester United, but those were two Irish horse tycoons or something like that, like racing tycoons.
Love it. Jockeys? They didn't even have, jockeys?
Were they just jockeys? but no, honestly, they weren't even part of that. I think the last one was Tottenham's owner. Can you go to that tab, Carter, real quick? Mm-hmm. All right, here it is. Look, this is the last English club owner to win the Premier League. It's a guy named Joe Lewis. You've heard of him, right?
I've never.
Of course not. guess what? This is how long it's been. He controlled Tottenham's ownership. That's how long ago it was.
When did Tottenham win anything? What do you mean? With Tottenham?
Yeah, he was also an active ownership of the Blackburn Rovers when they won in 94-95. That's the last team with a solely English owner. That's crazy, bro. This has been so long. It's not America's fault. Sure. In fact, the last time an American won the Premier League was and North, what is it, New England Sports Group? I forget what they're called. The guys who own Liverpool. It's clearly not
an
American sports ownership group.
Fenway Sports
Group. Fenway Sports Group. Yeah. It's clearly not an American ownership group. It's Todd Boehly and the way they're trying to run this team. What the best thing that everyone, the Glazers, everyone who's ever won, and you could hate the Glazers as much as you want, but they've won a lot. What they've done is they've said, okay, we'll own, and then we'll hire football people to make the football decisions. What clearly Chelsea isn't doing is that. There's no separation between the ownership and the people making decisions. And that, to me, is why. But also, if you go back in their history, even during Roman Abramovich, they clearly were firing managers at a quick pace.
Yeah, but
so this is part of their history.
But the managers had more autonomy under Abramovich's
absolutely. You know, the only time Abramovich got involved was when a player's dad was kidnapped. He was like, you want me to make two phone calls?
Hey, you would help you get involved a little bit more, but that's still pretty good. I'll take somebody helping me get my kidnapped
dad.
They
were also breaking all the rules, which they've gotten in trouble for. He owned the team from 2011 to 2018, and they've just paid a fine because of all the secret payments.
And that's the thing. It's like Premier League teams that have been around a long time or just clubs in English football, it doesn't, we don't have Leicester City's. Leicester City just got relegated to League One. But we don't have those stories, and there's a reason those stories don't happen. It's because there isn't this overnight like level of investment for most clubs. But Chelsea is one of them. When you hear like when we were growing up in our teens and 20s, when like Chelsea is now this powerhouse, it's like that was when you ask people who were fans of Chelsea in the Lampard, Drogba eras, like whatever. And you ask them, like, why are you a Chelsea fan? They'll mention, like, those players. But it's the same thing happened to
Manchester City.
Yeah. When it's like, you know, where were they before the Abramovich era and stuff like
nobody
that.
Nobody was a big fan of Claudio Reyna. That's why they were.
I mean, we were, but.
Yeah. But I mean, like, in England, right? That era was a rough era. Same thing with Leeds when they left the Premier League and went through their day.
Exactly. So
as far as I'm concerned, Chelsea's got an issue, but they have to hire a manager of the ilk of what they had before, not some
right.
But as soon as he walked in, he said, "Managing is aging, man. It's in the work." I'm like, "Dude, it's a wrap. It's a wrap. Walk away."
And this is my final point with Rossignol. It's a bad appointment because it highlights the nepotism, not the word, but it's the friendliness of like, oh, I know a guy, my homie.
They hired a stool pigeon. Yeah,
and
he'll listen to us.
The players took him as the mouthpiece Bluko.
He's like the son of the owner that starts working in the factory. You're like, ew.
And if the players are not respect, this is why like Cucurella was one of the he was pretty vocal. He was upset about Maresca getting let go. And he said that publicly. I don't know if it was like a podcast or something. But as soon as that happens, it's like, yo, you're at a Premier League club. Your coaches, you can't say that. Like,
yeah.
And then the last.
Like your mom introduces you to your new dad and your stepdad, and you go, I'm his dad. It's like,
maybe it's not the first thing you said.
Maybe this isn't the best
but then
introduction.
Liam Rossignol's last game. Cole Palmer and João Pedro were out in that game. They lost 3-0 to Brighton. It was leaked that Cole and João weren't going to be playing that game by Cucurella's barber.
First of all, he has a barber?
That's the first thing I said. I'm like, he has a barber.
I thought my man just had a Floby at home.
So, but when stuff like that is getting leaked, and I mean, there's that nothing is sacred in the locker room. That's it.
You got to start from the beginning.
Too much chaos. Yeah.
All right, let Mudrik manage. He ain't doing nothing else.
is he going on like Dancing with the Stars?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
All right, let's move on to Rapido Reactions. Our producer, Carter, is going to be tossing us a couple topics. We have 90 seconds to respond. When you hear the bell, we got to move on.
Uh-oh, Carter, what do you got, baby?
All right. Pellegrino Matarazzo, first American to win a trophy in the top five European clubs. Thoughts?
Clearly, the Americans are winning, baby. We do nothing wrong overseas. Pellegrino Matarazzo, a guy from Jersey, obviously his whole career in Europe, in Germany, he did it the right way, quote unquote. And look what is happening now. They're serenading him in the streets.
I mean, we talked about this. Wasn't this one of the earlier Rapido Reactions when Matarazzo was assigned?
I think we waited till his first win, but yes.
No, but I'm just saying, we said like, if he can,
if he can be successful and fight even just a little bit, they were in 17th when he got there.
Yeah.
And he immediately started moving them up the table. They started getting wins in Copa del Rey. We were like, yo, this could change the face of how people view American managers. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what happened. And you know what I hate the most is that people are being, we're like, American manager did all this. And people are like, he's Italian. You can't do that. You would, because if he was losing,
yeah,
you would be like, oh, yeah, this is my American man. No.
Also, real quick, what part of Italy is Fairlawn in? Okay? Tell me right now.
Also, to be Fairlawn? Honest, I don't want to be associated with Italy in any way when it comes to football. Okay?
Yeah, no, they need us. In fact, maybe the Italians should go out and get more Americans, huh? A couple guys that know how to eat cutlets.
Because that is crazy. No, I'm happy for him. Shout out to what's his name? Take from the Japanese dude that speaks Spanish fluently. Did you see him?
Matoma?
No. From
Take Subo. I can't remember his full name, but Take. Yeah.
He in the parade. He was like, I'm gonna have a good time, and he's like, "Y puta madre." Yeah. He hit the.
Damn! I didn't know he grew up in Mexico, bro.
Love it, bro. Go ahead, all right, Carter, what's next, Carter?
Alexis, Man City are top of the table. Todd.
What else is next, Carter?
Man, yo, seeing the table now, I looked at it yesterday. I'm like, what? How did this happen, bro?
Can I just tell you something? I'm dead inside, dude. I don't feel anything.
Burnley?
It's crushing my soul.
Why can't Burnley save you, bro? No,
Burnley could save themselves, bro. Take off that sweater.
I mean, they only gave up one goal. Haaland scores in the fifth minute, and then it's a battle the rest of the game.
I actually do think that I think Arsenal played two more times before City play their next game. I think there's a chance to get back to the top of the table and build up the goal differential, so it's not. Because they have the same amount of points right now.
Yeah.
It's the goal differential that's put City on top.
It's not. They're even on goal differential. It's probably wins.
Wins against.
Wins against or something like that.
So I feel like Arsenal can maybe build that cushion. You know, I'm dying here, bro.
It's crazy.
I don't know
bro.
What is happening, but I know exactly what's happening because it happened every goddamn year.
I saw. The one thing I did see was, who was it? Tim Howard talking about... he's talking with Vincent Kompany about what it's like playing for Pep and what Pep does early in the season. He puts a ton of pressure on the players to see who can handle the pressure of the season. And then he always has somebody ready to step up. So he puts a ton of pressure, and if you can't handle it, replaces you with someone that can.
Yeah.
And he made the example of Ryan Cherki. Ryan Cherki couldn't get minutes. Now he is. And now he's like basically what can lead them to a title. All right, next up.
Come to Arsenal.
Take a look at this. Did Ilya Sanchez just reveal their new head coach?
Yeah, who's that lady?
This is, okay, so just some context here. Ilya Sanchez of Austin FC posts on his Instagram story.
He also did delete this right away.
He deleted it immediately, but he posts on his Instagram story what seems to be a Zoom call with Wilfred Nancy. Everybody thinking, whoa, is Wilfred Nancy going to be the next head coach? This apparently was actually some sort of MLS seminar.
Why was Wilfred Nancy there?
I don't know. I mean, this is what it's all.
Wilfred Nancy on a couch right now getting paid by Celtic. There's no reason for him to be on an MLS anything.
But Ilya Sanchez, you can't be posting this, bro. I mean, I don't. This is also a part of your life that you don't need to document this.
I don't know. I disagree. Thank you, Ilya, for giving us another segment.
you are the reason we have a topic right now in Rapido Reactions, but. It's a little bit irresponsible.
I don't think it's irresponsible. I think he posted it. I think it's a good time. And then suddenly the PR people got in touch. And then he had to delete it.
Are you sure? Nico Estevez being like, yeah, is there something I don't know?
Yeah. Damn, you missed your dad. He's the stepdad.
Not great. I mean, Austin FC are going through it right now. They just got smoked by San Jose 5-1.
Shouts to San Jose.
Yeah, I mean, that what a season.
They're Carter's having a good time.
But the fact that, this did, you know, Austin FC Reddit went a little bit crazy over this. All right, what's next?
All right, last one. Lamine Yamal is out for the rest of the season. He should be back for the World Cup, but does this hurt Spain's chances with him being, you know, potentially out to start the World Cup?
This hurts everyone's chances. You want to see Lamine Yamal at the World Cup, which is why I'm saying we should have a World Cup every 2 years, bro.
Okay, so.
Every 2 years.
More
why?
Injuries.
Not more injuries. More Lamine Yamal. More Messi. More Ronaldo. Imagine we would have had twice as many World Cups for Messi, twice as many World Cups for Ronaldo. We could do this for Lamine Yamal.
Twice as many, you know, $150 train tickets to the match.
Well, don't do them in America. That's the biggest issue.
No, I mean, obviously, it's disappointing. I'm sure Adidas is the most upset because he's in every single promo for this World Cup. But it was also odd, the injury itself. He pulled his hamstring on a penalty that he scored.
Yeah.
And he
would have gotten injured if it wasn't for that penalty, because clearly there was something going on in his hamstring.
But clearly this is a sign of just, he has to play lots of fixtures.
Here's a real question. How's his pubis?
The pubis, I think, is okay.
Asking you because you're an expert on the pubis.
I'm the pubis expert.
You're on pubis watch. If anything happens to his pubis.
It wasn't pubis this time.
It could have been. The pubis is what pulls on all that.
But honestly, I don't know how severe the injury is. But look, Barcelona, how many? They're like 9 points ahead.
Basically, he's out for the rest of the season, which isn't that many matches. But he should be ready for the
Champions League.
World Cup is what, 48 days? Something like that?
50, I think. This is a good time to get this injury right now.
And he'll relax. Hey, ice the pubis.
Ice.
Calmate. Okay. Don't use the pubis. Okay. You know what I mean? Tell Shorty.
Hopefully people know what we're talking about.
Google
it. If you're new here.
I dare you to Google pubis.
Lamine Yamal pubis is not, we're not being rude. No.
You know what I think about when I think of Lamine Yamal? Remember when Adidas released his shoes? It's 304. But yes. He took a picture of his feet crossed and they were upside down. Put 304 in your head upside down. What does that spell?
H-O-E.
Ho. He got a ho on his shoe. Which tells you right there. That's how he hurt his pubis.
Okay. I mean, I guess we put two and two together. This is
that's why you come here, dog.
This is why Alexis is on television. That's right.
Was.
All right.
Actually, you're seeing pretty clearly why I was.
Okay. All right, everybody. Another Rapido reactions in the books.
Thank you, Carter.
Thank you, Carter, for
perusing.
Perusing all the pubis internet.
The internet. He's on pubis talk.
Pubis talk is a great place. Yeah. Great community.
A lot of options for you on that damn app.
All right. Shout out to Clint Dempsey as well for joining us on the pod. That was awesome. Clint Dempsey, we got to get like dinner with him or something. I mean, it feels like we're.
I feel like he would catch it. You know what I mean?
Like he would catch the
dinner. I don't know. That sounded crazy. I mean, good. He's a good guy. But I meant like, I feel like he would hunt for whatever we
had.
He
would hunt the food and then we can have it. Yeah, well,
Or he'd fish. You know what I mean?
He'd go vlog.
That would be.
Have you ever been fishing before?
I went once and it was quite nice.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think have I ever been fishing? I've only been fishing like at the end of a pier, not like on
a boat. Never been on a boat?
No.
Yeah, me neither.
Okay. Yeah. It sounds like you had been. But. No.
So you didn't get the opportunity to be. I've never gone fishing on a boat. Part of me thinks like if you start to pull the boat with tip off, I don't know how to swim. So I'm like, I'll be cool on a pier. I'm cool on a pier.
All right.
Know what I want to do? I want to do magnet fishing. Anyway, you ever seen that? You throw like a super high powered magnet in there and you find all types of stuff like guns and bikes.
Okay. Yeah. No, I'm not.
We should do that. All right, Clint, regular fishing. Me and you, magnet fishing.
Yeah.
Google magnet fishing when you're done, dude. It's crazy the stuff they find.
Okay.
Don't do it in New York, though.
All right.
You're about to catch a case.
We'll sort that out with Clint. And see if
we'll see if he's in one of those.
Magnet
too.
Fishing with us. Yeah. But as always, make sure you follow us on all socials at Soccer Cooligans. Follow us on Instagram, Blue Sky. Hit like on this video and subscribe on YouTube. Do all that stuff. We'll be back on Monday with a brand new episode. Who's on Monday, Carter? Who do we know? Who's on?
Weston McKennie is a big one. Yeah,
Weston
yeah.
McKennie is back.
Back on the show. Back the star is revolving, bro. So
Weston McKennie will be joining us. So I'll be on the lookout for that. And anything else? I think I got everything.
That's it. He always says he hopes your team lose. And I always say I love you.
Yeah. So make sure your teams lose, everybody.
Bye.